Welcome to the Profit Business Cast, Canada's podcast for innovative entrepreneurs and executives. And brought to you by Bennett Gold LLP Chartered Accountants. Here is your host, Robert Gold.
Once again, from high atop the Business Cast Podcast Center in Toronto, live and in the morning, we're way off to the east. I can see Nameless Cove, Newfoundland. I'm Robert Gold, Managing Partner of Bennett Gold LLP, Chartered Accountants in Toronto. This podcast is produced in partnership with Profit Magazine and ProfitGuide.com. Today, we're going to have some fun. Dr. Megan Walker is back with us. Megan is the CEO and co-founder of Bright Almond. Megan, welcome back to the Profit Business Cast.
Thanks, Robert. It's great to be here.
I love Bright Almond. BrightAlmond.com. It says on the website, find a licensed complementary health professional near you. So why don't we back up a bit? Tell us about yourself and what offerings Bright Almond actually provides and how you came to co-found this unique thing.
Yeah, so I'm a naturopathic doctor by background. I'm running a practice in downtown Toronto, and I really love business. So 5 years into that venture, I sold my practice, and I left with two key feelings. And one was more people needed access to a form of medicine that treats the cause of their problem, not just the symptom. And I wanted to be able to scale that. And I really felt that technology was going to be the enabler for more people to be able to access this form of medicine. And I didn't know what that would look like or what information that would take. And Bright Almond was a startup that hadn't yet launched. And I had done some consulting with them. And they really had this vision of connecting consumers to high-quality, complementary health practitioners. And so there was a really great fit. So I had the opportunity to come on board as part of their founding team. And what Bright Almond really offers is a mechanism for consumers to access regulated complementary health providers. So natural medicine is a huge, huge global sector, and it's confusing for consumers. And what's really confusing is what is good quality and what is bad quality, and how do I make that differentiation? And so there's a real difference between someone like myself who spent 8 years in school and 3 rounds of board exams to be able to do what I do, and I'm regulated by the province as a regulated professional, and someone who's done a few weekend courses in natural health and wants to start to help people. So Bright Almond really only works with regulated providers in the natural health space. And then from there, we have a number of different offerings that we can provide to consumers that all focus on the highest quality with respect to natural health products and practitioners.
Well, I can't imagine that it was easy. We spoke a couple of years ago as the venture was getting going, but what were the three biggest challenges that you and the team faced when launching Bright Almond?
I was a practitioner, and I was like, okay, I want to see more people, and I want to help more people. And so I just assumed that speaking to my colleagues and saying, look, we have this really fantastic platform for you to be able to reach more people was going to be easy. And actually getting in front of busy practitioners, it was a huge challenge. Do you use technology? Do you pick up the phone? Do you go visit their practice? And how do you reach 20,000 eligible practitioners across the country? So that was certainly one of them. And the other one that I really recall was managing consumer expectations, especially with respect to the type of experience that they're used to having online and doing that on a budget. So, you know, we go to Google and it looks like a really simplistic offering and website, and yet there's millions of dollars invested in making that simple. So that was definitely a huge challenge for us. How do we look high quality on a budget from the beginning? So that took a lot of strategy and planning for us. And then really, like any startup, we had to become experts at everything. So SEO and design and copy, and we knew that was the case because we wanted to run lean. But they take a lot of time and they take a lot of personal energy, and it's been a big push for us, certainly.
Well, the personal energy, I think, is something that people really discount. And we hear it a lot in tech companies. They call it sweat equity, and that really means the personal energy. But tell me something. I know you've told me your challenges, but was there any initial surprises that caught you completely off guard that you were not prepared for, a real rabbit hole?
I think one of them was just how expensive it is to experiment. You know, I think as entrepreneurs, we kind of go, here's my vision. Let's try a few things to kind of solidify that. And because we were going after that online space, and we have this tendency to think that online space is free to access, but to do it well, you have to pay to play, and you have to be bang on. You can quickly spend a lot of money trying to get visitors online, and if you don't know what you're doing, it's gone pretty quickly.
So let's talk about where we are now. We're still a startup, although we're a few years down the road, but let's talk about the financing challenges faced by a growing venture. And this is a venture led by yourself, a female entrepreneur. Does that cause you any difficulties or any advantages, your gender?
It's a great question because it's an important question. And I think sometimes we don't want to talk about gender, but it's an issue. And it's something that I think warrants discussion in the entrepreneurial space. You know, what's really interesting is last year, 2/3 of businesses in Canada that were started by women. 68% of those had no outside capital, and about 73% of those ended up being profitable. So women are running and leading really successful businesses. And yet when we look at women-led companies that are looking for venture capital or funding, less than 5% are being generous, are actually being awarded venture capital funding. There's this huge disparity between the metrics that indicate success and women being able to access the financing that might help them get there. And I remember Kevin O'Leary speaking a little while ago, and he was saying, you know, strategically, he invests in female-led startups because he's seeing those become consistently profitable. All of that being said, it's definitely hard. And I think one of the things that I've realized, and I kind of understood this from having my own practice and spending time and earning my income based on interpersonal relations, and that is that men and women network and interact differently. And I think just given the demographic of where a lot of venture capitalists are in their life and in their accumulation of wealth, they're not necessarily used to women asking them for money or women taking the direct form of feedback that they are used to giving. That's been a challenge. I think how I approach venture capitalists, I'm catching them a little bit off guard. And, you know, personally, to top that off, I'm also 7 months pregnant. So it's this elephant in the room when I'm standing up in front of a group of investors. And I'm being really frank about how we're going to plan around that and what systems we've put in place so that we can continue to move forward and we can safe their investment. I mean, this is a whole new category of glass ceiling breaking that I think we're challenging with Bright Almond. But at the end of the day, we confidently present our story, we present our numbers, we present our team, and the company speaks for itself. And I think as soon as you have the opportunity to really do that and delve into it, the gender thing slips by the wayside. But I think it's getting in the door where it presents the biggest challenge.
And I want to understand a little bit more about that because you gave us some good stats and some good information. I understand that the door is only partially opened, but why is that? To me, it's because generally it's a male-dominated financing industry, generally, and they're not expecting bright female entrepreneurs to come in the door. Then what happens? They go, oh, you're female. We don't know what to do with you. How does this go wrong?
You know, I think historically, especially in the tech sector, the founders who were looking for money were men because 80% of the graduates from engineering, computer engineering and software engineering, were men. So that was just sort of a natural evolution of that space. And I think part of it now is a lot of women are running smaller businesses, so they're not necessarily looking for that venture capital component. But once you've had the opportunity to start to network and engage some of these investors, I think that the gender piece starts to slip away. I mean, at the end of the day, they're investing in you. And smart investors are not looking at your gender. They're looking at what you can bring to the table. So I think once you have stepped beyond that initial shock value, if you are confident in what you're presenting and you have something intriguing and you have a strong business argument, I think anyone who is savvy with their money is going to look past the gender bias.
Well, that's a great segue to the next thing that's on my mind, and that has to do with pitching investors. Are there strategies or lessons that you can share? Is it like Dragon's Den, or is that just TV and this is a completely different world?
I've never been on Dragon's Den. I can't say exactly what that's like, although everyone just says we should just go on it and get it over with. But I think the real world relationship building involved in seeking investment really is that. It's about starting with conversations and seeking advisors. And as you start to establish relationships with people, there's a natural segue in terms of them understanding where the cycle of your business is. I think short of an actual pitch competition, you're really sort of standing up there with a time clock having to execute through a deck. That being said, we're still presenting pitch decks and we're still presenting five-year plans. So I think it's similar in that you've got to know your numbers, you've got to stand up there confidently, but I think the process itself in the quote-unquote real world is usually a little bit longer and slightly more nuanced than what we see on Dragon's Den or Shark Tank or any of those.
So what about government grants, assistance programs? We always hear and talk about the SHRED program in Canada. Did you and your team access any government funding or assistance as you developed Bright Almond?
That's a good question. So a lot of the government grants are very specific around the technology requirements that you have to have in place. So we were eligible for some and not for others. And we are part of an incubator called Communitech based out of Waterloo. So that afforded us some eligibility to some different grants that paid for summer interns and short-term employment places. But I think there's also a big difference between you're looking for $30,000 to get your startup or venture off the ground, of which there are several options in Canada. And We're looking to raise $500,000 or $1 million or more to get us through the next 18 to 24 months. And at that point, there's specific requirements that usually the amount of effort for a grant-based funding approach isn't necessarily worth what you're going to get from the return. But I would say in that smaller sector, and especially in that startup piece, there's some really interesting options in Canada. It seems to be a lot more in the U.S., but there's certainly some out there.
So what is interesting, of course, about BrightAlmond, and again, it's brightalmond.com, is you're offering your service to consumers, but you really have to bring the other professionals, the complementary health professionals, into the roost before you can actually offer anything to consumers. Are there lessons or pitfalls that you'd like to share with us about offering web-based services to other professionals? Because there will be other people out there that want to target their professionals, whether they're lawyers, accountants, healthcare people, but professionals nonetheless. What are your thoughts there?
I'll just say I could spend a lot more time talking about the benefits of being able to create an online or a digital solution for those professions, because there are many of them. So I don't want to leave people with this notion that it's really, really hard, although it is. And the two things that were really difficult for us were getting airtime in front of those professionals, lawyers and doctors and practitioners. These people are busy, and they're typically in a fee-for-service model where their time is money. It's really hard for them to want to make time for you unless you can clearly articulate and speak to them about how you are going to save them money or earn them more income. And then the other thing, and this has presented an ongoing, I won't say frustration, but area of awareness for us, is that we got into this because we were really interested in how technology could solve solutions. But typically, certainly within my profession, and Robert, you could probably speak to yours, these are not technology-oriented individuals. And so trying to get them to understand how this piece of technology is going to be able to assist them in their practice development or business development actually proved a little bit more complex than we were thinking. We had a big offering at first, and people just couldn't handle it. So despite the fact that it would be really easy for them to use and it would save them a lot of time and money, the concept of what it was just too much for them. So I think sometimes we just need to back up and actually keep it really simple.
Well, I think what you just described there is what the popular definition of a lean startup now is, and that's iteration. Iterate and iterate until you get it right. And it sounds like that's what you did as you honed down your offering.
Yeah, we did. And the other thing we didn't do is we didn't get paralyzed by perfection. And speaking with other female business owners, I think that's one thing that we, you know, back to that gender-based thing, we have this tendency to do is we want to deliver the perfect product before we put it out there. And I'll describe myself as a recovering perfectionist, because with technology, you just can't. You're quite right. You have to put it out there. You have to see how people play with it, and then you go back and change it. And I always use the analogy, it's kind of like paving the pathway before you see how people want to walk across the lawn. You really should let them start to walk and trample and then decide where you want to lay down the cement.
Well, great advice. Fascinating talking to you again. Dr. Megan Walker, great luck as this goes forward. BrightAlmond.com. Megan is the CEO and co-founder of BrightAlmond. Megan, thank you for being a guest on the Profit Business Cast.
Such a pleasure, Robert. Thanks so much.
And until next time, I'm Robert Gold, Managing Partner of Benegold LLP, Chartered Accountants in Toronto. If you want to see how we clearly articulate what we want to do for you, check us out at benegold.ca. You can find other great episodes of the Profit Business Cast at profitguide.com. See you next time in the morning, everyone, and good night, Nameless Cove, Newfoundland.
You've been listening to the Profit Business Cast, Canada's business podcast, and brought to you by Bennett Gold LLP, Chartered Accountants. From acceleration to succession, strategy to tax planning, there's a lot more through the door at bennettgold.ca.